Cape Talk, Car Talk.
Time for us to take your motoring questions for our journalist, Chira De Siena of cars.co.za. A reminder to get dialing now on 021-446-0567, or you can leave your question as a voice note on 072-567-1567. You also have the option of sending an SMS to 31567. Just a reminder, please don't ask us to give an estimated value on a vehicle. For that, we'll direct you to the cars.co.za site for some fair comparison. But anything else is welcome. Chira, always great to have you with us. Good afternoon.
Hi, Pippa. Good afternoon.
Before we talk cars and what you've been driving and answer any listener questions, we want to talk about a big motor sport event that's coming to Cape Town this weekend. And it's a really significant one, Chira. I'm not that familiar with the sport of rallycross, but the World Championship is coming to Cape Town this weekend.
It is, yeah. It's a huge event. It's an incredibly fast-growing form of motorsport. And I must be honest, I actually don't watch any motorsport. I know I am a bit of a car guy,
but even
Formula One doesn't really hold my interest these days. But one form of motorsport I will happily watch is rallycross. It's got a couple of key differentiators between itself and other motorsports, which I think has made it really successful. Part of it is that the tracks are quite short. They're built in a sort of amphitheater design. And the idea is that just about any spectator from just about anywhere in the stands can see the entire track. So it's not like the cars kind of whiz past you once and then you wait 5 minutes for them to come back again. You can see all the action right in front of you. There are a couple of really cool aspects to the track. There's a big jump in the middle, so the cars get airborne, and they get properly airborne as well. And then to throw the drivers off, there's something called a joker lap. So it's actually an extra bit of the circuit, which they have to take once per race. And it becomes quite tactical because some of the drivers choose to get it out of the way right in the beginning. Some of them hang on till the end, try and build up a bit of a lead, and then take the joker lap, which adds about 3 seconds to your lap time. And the races are fast and furious. There's six laps per race. There's six cars in each race. They bump into each other a hell of a lot. There's over 50 races in a race weekend, so the action just never stops.
Okay, and that weekend is this weekend, Saturday and Sunday at Killarney Racetrack. Have they had to adjust the track at all to host this event, Chira?
They have. They're actually using a small part of the track. If your listeners are familiar with the track, they're using turns 2 and 3 of Killarney. Then they've built a sort of a gravel inroad, which runs sort of in the middle of the track. And then I think there's one or two more corners that have been added in the infield of Killarney. The Killarney itself is about 3Ks long, the full circuit, but the rallycross circuit is only 1 kilometer long. And they've also built a massive grass embankment on the side of the racetrack where the tickets are actually quite cheap for that grass embankment. But to be honest, I think that's the best place to sit.
Okay, now tickets are still available through Ticket Pros. We checked just before we came to air, and there are still tickets left ranging in price from 150 to 700 Rand, depending on whether you're buying for one day or both days, etc., and where you're going to sit. Chira, I mean, it's really significant, not only that this is the first time it's being held here in Cape Town, but it's the first time this event has ever been held anywhere on the African continent, and I believe we're actually locked in to another 4 years of it after this weekend.
Yes, correct. So the World Rallycross takes place in 12 countries across the world, 12 stages. We are now the final stage of the entire competition, and we will be for this year and the next 4 years, as you say. And what's quite exciting about that is that usually the championships go down to the last race. And that means that the world's eyes will probably be on Cape Town for the next 4 years as the World Rallycross Championship grows in stature. And as the championship itself comes to a conclusion, hopefully in our home city.
That's fantastic. Okay, thanks for the heads up, Chira. We've shared the video you shared with us walking around the track with one of the South African drivers. There are two South African drivers taking part, Ashley Haig-Smith and Mark Cronier. And if you want to see them, the action is at Killarney Racetrack this weekend. Your tickets bookable via ticketpros.co.za. If you're interested in having a look at the cars and finding out more, please take a look at our Twitter feed where we've shared that video. With that, let's take our first caller. Ross has been waiting patiently from Thornton with a question about a Mahindra. Ross, nice to have you with us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yes, I just wondered what your opinion was of the Mahindra range. I, at the moment, drive a Jazz. I did have a Taz and then converted to a Jazz, Honda Jazz. Mm-hmm. And I was just looking at them in the showroom, and wondering what your opinion was of the KUV 100, which is, I think it's a 1.2 engine.
So the KUV 100 is unfortunately pretty much the only Mahindra I haven't driven, which is okay. A bit frustrating at this point. I do know that it's the best-selling Mahindra in the country. It has found a lot of homes, which is usually a good sign. I think it's been a bit of a sales success for Mahindra because they haven't really managed to find much success in the passenger market. Their Buckies are actually sell quite well. They're quite reliable little beasts, but the passenger car market has been a tough one for them to crack. I think they've sort of done it with the KUV, and unfortunately, much more than that, I can't really say. I think they come in at about 170,000 rand, which is fairly well priced these days for a budget car. But I would have a look out there for a demo. I'm almost certain you'll find a demo or a young second-hand model.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Ross, thanks for your call and have a great afternoon. We're taking more calls on 021-446-0567. In the meantime, a couple of WhatsApp questions coming through. Start with this one. Can you please give an opinion on the Hyundai iX35 as a car, particularly with an emphasis on fuel economy? I'm thinking of buying one. What's your view of that vehicle, Chira?
The iX35 was also a great sales success in this country. The new generation has changed names back to the Tucson, which is what it was called before the iX35.
Okay. So
if you are trying to keep track of it, it does get a little bit confusing. It's about the size of a Toyota RAV4. And if you are particularly worried about fuel economy, then you should really, really go for the diesel. And the good news with that particular iX35 is for the last 2 years, I think it was on sale. It had a fantastic 1.7-liter turbo diesel engine, which I got to spend a week with, and I think I averaged in the sixes, sort of 6.5, 6.9 to the 100, which is really, really good for a vehicle of that size. So if you are looking for an iX35, you will only be able to buy them secondhand, and I do recommend trying to find one of those diesels.
Okay, thanks for the advice and good luck with the purchase. Another WhatsApp wanting your opinion on a crossover SUV. The person's considering the Honda HR-V, the Toyota CHR and Suzuki SX4. They'd like a comment in terms of fuel consumption, performance and handling.
I think a lot of it is sort of much of a muchness. The engines are all fairly similar. I think they're all 1.2s across all three of those cars. I think the major difference that you're going to find with those cars is in terms of practicality. So the SX4, nice and practical. The Honda, probably the most practical. It feels like you could move house with that Honda. It's got really clever seating, which allows the entire load back area of the car to load flat. And then when it comes to the CHR, that's a completely different story. For some reason, that car has the smallest boot of any car that I've driven probably in the last 5 years.
Gosh.
So Toyota South Africa decided to put a full-size spare tire in the back, and they had to raise the boot floor to accommodate it. So you can't even get a sort of a standard-sized cooler box in the back of a CHR. So as I mentioned, when it comes to fuel economy and engine power, much of a muchness, I think you're probably going to average somewhere between 7 and 9 liters to the 100 in any of those cars. And none of those cars, to my knowledge, offer a diesel option, so you will have to go for a petrol.
Okay, thank you for the feedback. We're talking cars with Chira de Siena of cars.co.za, welcoming your calls on 021-446-0567. You can also send an SMS to 31567, as somebody has just done, asking your opinion on the Chevy Trailblazer.
The Trailblazer will, of course, be affected by Chevrolet pulling out of South Africa as of 1 January or 31 December, I suppose, which is in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And I suppose buying a Chevrolet, well, let's start with the model itself, the Trailblazer. Nothing wrong with it, in my opinion. Possibly in some ways better than the segment leader, which is the Toyota Fortuner. It's a similar kind of car. It's built on a Buckey platform and runs a Buckey engine, Buckey gearbox. So very tough, very reliable, very, very good off-road. Then when we turn our attention to the Chevrolet brand, I suppose this is where it gets a little bit more tricky. The company taking over Chevrolet will apparently honor warranties and will provide parts for the next 9 years. But whether you feel comfortable in taking their assurance as a promise, I suppose it's up to the individual buyer. unfortunately, it's so difficult to say whether Chevrolet owners are going to have an easy ride, you know, for the next sort of 5-10 years.
Okay, so thanks for that caution, but also thanks for the feedback on the vehicle itself. Let's go back to the lines. Mike has given us a call from the CBD wanting to talk about the RAV4. Mike, good afternoon.
Hi. I've forgotten your name, wherever you are, but hi.
Chiro. Chiro won't be offended. Go ahead with your question, Mike.
I've always been an Alpha driver, and I've had Alphas all the time. And then the other day, a few months ago, I got persuaded to sell my Alpha, which was falling apart. But I bought a RAV4 for some, and I'm still not sure why. I kind of like it, but it's just not the same. But I'm just concerned about the fuel consumption. And it does 10.8, 10.9. Is that good or bad? I have no idea. I'm still not sure why I'm driving this car. But
I know. I know Alpha owners get particularly attached to their cars. They say you can't be a petrolhead until you've owned an Alpha, which I'm yet to do. Actually, it doesn't sound too bad. I must be honest. What engine are you running? Is it the 2-liter petrol?
No, I think it's 1.6.
The 1.6.
Well, I think it's petrol. I don't know. The problem is I lost the book the day I bought it. So I don't actually know what I've got, to tell you the honest
truth. Oh, I see. An easy way to sort that out would just be to phone any Toyota dealership with the VIN number. They'll punch it in and they'll be able to tell you loads of details about the car. So that might be a good idea, just to get as much information as you can about the model. But yeah, I mean, I'm driving two brand new cars that are roughly of the same size. And the two cars that I'm driving are averaging just over 11 liters to the 100. So even with very, very modern technology, that is around about the average you can expect from a petrol motor powering a car of that size.
Okay, Mike, sounds like you need to make a call to your dealership and get the information you need. And good luck. I hope you get used to driving the RAV4. A long time ago, in another lifetime, before children and before salaries got eaten up the day they were paid, I used to drive an Alpha. And Chiro, I've never quite recovered from the experience. So I understand your comment.
I don't know if recovered in a good way or a bad way.
But no, I've never quite gotten over the loss of that car, to be more honest. Okay, Mike, thanks for your call. We've got Brian on the line from Stellenbosch. Good afternoon, Brom.
Hello. Chiro, I just have a question. I'm planning to buy an Audi Q5 second-hand with about 150,000 Ks on the clock. Is there any technical potential problems that I should be aware of with Audis?
Is it a diesel or a petrol?
A diesel.
A diesel. So around about the sort of 130, maybe between 120, 140,000. I have heard some issues where the injectors on the Audi Q5 have to be replaced, the diesel injectors. And then also something to do with the exhaust. My memory has just slipped slightly, but there is a fairly expensive item replacement that needs to happen with the exhaust. Those can run you sort of somewhere between 40,000 Rand per exercise. So it's possible that because the car's at 150, either I would say it's already been done or it's being sold because it hasn't been done and it needs to be done. That's sort of pretty much the main issue between a diesel and a petrol, is that when the parts on the diesel go, they tend to be more expensive than the equivalent parts on a petrol engine. So if you can find out, and sorry, I'm being a little bit vague, and I hope you do manage to sort of get clarity on it. But those two parts, if they have been replaced, I would say it's probably not a bad buy.
Okay, 100%. Thanks.
Bram, thank you for your call. Have a wonderful afternoon. We have got, is it Shaney on the line from Cape Town? Or Shanae? I'm not sure.
Yes, Shaney.
Shaney, hi there. Welcome.
I wonder if you could just advise me. I drive a 2005 BMW, loyal as can be. It's got about 240,000 Ks on the clock. It's a 320 diesel. And I'm looking at the X1, the BMW X1, so it's a four-year-old. Is the maintenance cost on the X1, it's just the S-Drive I'm looking at, also diesel, considerably more, or am I looking at similar sort of maintenance costs?
Yeah, I can't see it being too different. The reality is these days that so many components are shared across many, many different cars and many different platforms. So, for instance, the X1 and a lot of the Mini products are actually very, very similar cars underneath the skin. And, you know, for instance, if a lot of people might think that Mini would be easier to maintain than a BMW or perhaps vice versa. But the reality is that they're very, very similar under the skin. So when it comes to the X1, I don't think it will probably be a bit more expensive than maintaining your current car, because generally as cars get older, you get more generic parts available for that car. So for the X1 with parts replacements, you're most likely going to have to go through BMW, which of course will be a bit more expensive than getting generic parts. But I think, again, sort of much of a muchness when it comes to these things, whether you're buying an X1 or an X3 or the equivalent Audi or Mercedes product, I don't think there's too much between them.
Okay, Shani, thanks so much for your call. I hope that's given you some direction with the decision, and good luck with it. Gavin, thanks for holding patiently. Gavin's on the line from Somerset West. Good afternoon.
Hi, guys. I need some advice. I've got a 1400 Etios, 3 years old with 10,000 Ks on, and a 1600 Corolla, 5 years old with 75,000 Ks on. Now, I have to make a decision. I don't need both those vehicles. Do I trade them both in on something like a Honda Civic secondhand, or do I keep one of them?
Sure. This is, I feel like this is a word puzzle that I might have got in matric math. So the Etios, you said, has 10,000 Ks on it, and the Corolla has 75,000.
Yeah.
How old is the Corolla?
The Corolla is 5 years old.
Okay. I'm not a huge fan of the Etios, I must be honest. No offense, but I think the Etios is one of those cars that's really built to a price. And Toyota themselves offer a pretty low warranty and service plan on that car, which I think your service plan's probably already run out, actually, because you said the car was 3 years old.
That's right, Gavin, yes.
Now, my big choice is now, as I said, is to sort of go a little bit more upmarket, go for a Honda Civic, trade them both in, or then alternatively, as you imply, possibly keep the Corolla.
I was about to say, if I would say two routes, perhaps let the Etios go, keep the Corolla. You know, the money that you sell the Etios for, you can put that in a high interest account, and you've just got this, you know, you've got loads of ammo if anything ever goes wrong with the Corolla. But, you know, Corollas being what they are, I don't think you'll have too many problems. That being said, trading them both in on a Honda, also never a bad idea. Hondas come with a great warranty. They also have an excellent reputation for reliability. I don't think you'll notice too much of a difference between say, the ride quality in your Corolla and the ride quality in, say, a Honda Civic. They're fairly similar cars. So I would lean towards keeping the Corolla, but that, of course, I haven't seen the car. I'm not sure of the condition of it. But that's, I think, would be the route I'd go.
Okay, good luck to you, Gavin. And just to quickly give you some feedback from people driving the cars we've been speaking about, Adam has WhatsApped to say on that RAV4, the fuel consumption you've described is completely normal. I'm driving that vehicle, and that's what I get as well. Thank you for that, Adam. And thank you, too, to Albert, saying the latest CHR from Toyota now has a small spare wheel. Toyota has gotten rid of that full-size spare that was taking up so much space in the boot. So, Albert, thank you for that tip as well.
Great.
Good to hear.
Yeah.
Chiro, as always, thanks for being with us, and we'll chat to you again next week.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Chiro de Siena of cars.co.za, and please check out the Cape Talk Facebook feed and Twitter feed if you'd like to watch the video that his team's put together around the big rallycross event at Killarney this weekend.